Thank you for listening to Overleveraged, where we explore the big macro themes affecting investors, economic imbalances, giant geopolitical trends, tail risks and tremors, and everywhere risks are not being fully priced into markets. Remember, trading carries risk, and all opinions are provided as general market commentary only. Please do your own research. Our risk warning will follow at the end. Hello and welcome to Overleveraged. And today's theme is Tesla, partly because Tesla plays into some of the macro themes that we've spoken about in the past, EVs, electrification, but also because of Elon Musk. And he is a quixotic figure, I think a Marmite figure, love him or hate him, but he's certainly generates lots of column inches and lots of debate. So I'm very pleased to welcome today's special guest who's joining us from New York, and it's Mark Spiegel of Stanfield Capital. So thank you very much, Mark, for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me on the show, Neil.
Just by way of a quick introduction, I think we spoke a few years back, and a lot's passed under the bridge since then. We were talking about Tesla, and specifically, you know, you've been a pretty vocal Tesla bear for some time, and I think it's fair to say that a lot has moved in favor of your opinion over the last few years. There's been some results out recently. The shares have been moving around a heck of a lot. But can you just tell us where you are with Tesla right now, and what's your view? What's your views on Tesla?
So I've been short Tesla in meaningful size for literally 10 years now. Since I started following it, maybe 2013, but I got short in size in 2014, and it's for all the reasons. It was for all the reasons that we're seeing happening now. I was just obviously so early. I mean, I gave the market more credit for foresight and intelligence than it deserved. And the reason was simple. I mean, the car business is a very tough, very competitive business. Nobody gets anything that's proprietary and manages to keep it for very long. I mean, the simple examples I've used in the past are, you know, some company invented the automatic transmission, and within 3 years or whatever, everyone had them. Air conditioning, power windows, whatever, power brakes. So I just said in 14, when Tesla was already way ahead of itself, but much cheaper than it is now, I said, listen, the day that electric cars actually become a viable segment of the market and a desirable segment of the market, every car company out there will have electric cars, and Tesla will be just another car company. Well, Tesla is just another car company. In fact, now it's worse than just another car company, because most other car companies are at least reporting sales that are roughly flat, you know, some of them up a little bit. And Tesla's now reporting negative sales comps. But and the stock is almost 60% off of its all-time high. But that said, it still has a massive, I mean, I'm looking at my screen now, it still has a massive market cap relative to what it should have. I mean, this is an industry that's selling at an average of around 6x earnings, and Tesla is selling at, you know, probably 95 times the money it'll make this year.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? And a bit, you know, I guess some of that is maybe down to the Musk factor, and we could probably talk
100% of it.
It's all because of him, and it, you know, as I said, sort of at the beginning, he's a Marmite figure. But just before we, I think we can probably talk about Musk in a little bit. But some of the numbers that have been coming out, you know, the margins have been crushed, and one of the things that I think you've mentioned quite a few times is this full self-driving, the FSD product, and what that means. And there was this news that Musk had gone to China and that he secured some kind of access there. And then, you know, within 2 days, they're laying off all the supercharger staff.
So within 1 day, well, 2 days maybe, yeah, China time. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a difficult one, you know, a difficult one for people to necessarily make sense of. But
I don't think it's difficult for anybody who has critical thinking skills to make sense of it. I mean, it's only difficult for people who lack such skills and therefore are Tesla shareholders. I mean, take the China thing as an example. Tesla didn't get permission to fully deploy its fraudulently named full self-driving. What it got was it was forced to make a mapping deal with Baidu to use Baidu Maps and Baidu in-lane navigation. I'm not sure exactly what that means. And so it's going to offer the same level 2 driver assistance that at least 10 other companies are offering already in China. I mean, there's a Reuters article today that happens to mention that fact. So, you know, so what Tesla has is it has the same aging product line, while Chinese EV makers have all these much newer and much cooler electric cars, and all those much newer and much cooler electric cars already have the driver assistance package that Tesla just got approval to deploy. So, you know, I was shocked by the extent of yesterday's move, like 15% on massive volume.
Yeah.
But that said, by the end of the day, I hadn't removed any stock. I got stopped out of some and put it back on. I just decided as the meaning, or I should say meaninglessness of that trip sinks in, you know, that I think that day will wind up having been a one and done. I don't know if you or your audience look at technicals, but it was basically a move straight up to the 100-day moving average, which in the past has proven to be both important support and resistance for the stock. It tagged 100-day, you know, exceeded it by a few cents, and, you know, then backed off. And here we are today. It's 4% below yesterday's close. So, as I'm speaking. So, yeah.
So there's two things there that you mentioned that I think one is fraudulently named FSD. So maybe you can explain a bit more about that. And then the other thing is the fact that the aging models, so Model Y is 4 years old. There was a Roadster announced in 2017. That's yet to appear, I believe. So there's a lot going on there, or there's a lot not happening. There's a lot of promises, but not as much being delivered as is being promised.
Well, first of all, that Roadster would just be a tiny niche product anyway. And Musk took, I don't know how many, $250,000 deposits. So he's had free use of the cash and of course has delivered nothing. And that was a long time ago. But so back to the Model Y. The Y is still the best selling car within its class. But that doesn't mean a hell of a lot if the number of sales are declining and the class is growing around it. And, you know, pretty soon it won't be the best selling car even in its class. So, what Musk did was, you know, the Model 3 and the Model Y, when they came out, were state of the art, you know, mid to high, moderately high price, let's call them, electric cars. But there's been no meaningful change in them since then. And the industry has moved on drastically. I mean, now their range is sort of mid-pack. Their interiors are terribly Spartan. I mean, they look like, you know, cheap Yugo interiors. I think their interfaces are dangerous. And I'm not the only one who thinks that. By putting everything on a touchscreen and not even having that screen in front of the driver, but forcing the driver to look off to the side. I mean, there are insurance stats that those cars crash far more often than other cars. And I'm sure one of the reasons is you got to look down and to the right to that screen. You know, it's just
okay. Yeah.
So the point is that. Yeah, while every other car company in the world is continually reinvesting in new models, I mean, I'm long Volkswagen. So, you know, Volkswagen had a disappointing earnings report today. But one of the reasons is they've got 30 new models, Volkswagen Group, including all the brands, 30 new models coming out this year. So, you know, what Musk did was he basically milked what he could out of these two models and juiced Tesla's numbers to artificially high levels, financial numbers, cashed in on his, not cashed in, but was awarded his whole, you know, whatever it was, 40, 50, $60 billion stock package. And now what he's got is two aging models, because he didn't reinvest the way every other automaker does. And like the cherry on the sundae is he lost his stock package. So, you know, he was such a wise guy, and it came around and, as we say here in the States, bit him on the ass, you know. So, yeah, so that's the situation. So now they, you know, they're years behind deploying new models, which look anywhere near as nice as not only obviously the vast number of Chinese models, but, you know, the newer stuff from Europe also. You know, and even some of the newer American stuff. I mean, GM Cadillac has this beautiful looking electric car. I mean, I've seen a few of them on the street. It's wild looking. Unfortunately, for very good reasons, I shouldn't say unfortunately, consumers worldwide are now rebelling against buying electric cars. And you know, the reason for that is, as I often say to people, you know, if every car in the world cost $45,000 and were electric and gave you a 300-mile range, and, you know, if you stopped to recharge it fully, it took you a half hour to 45 minutes. And then someone came along and said, hey, I invented this great vehicle. It costs $15,000 less and gives you 500 miles of range. And you can, you know, recharge it in 5 minutes at, you know, almost any corner, any busy intersection, you know, in the world. I mean, what would happen? People, they go, oh, my God. I mean, they would all. So,
yeah, it's the best argument I've heard.
You know, they're a step backwards in terms of consumer convenience. And so once the massive number of early adapters got them, you know, their sales are dying even with the crazy subsidies that they get. Without the subsidies, imagine where they'd be. And of course, it's a different topic, but if you look at the numbers, and anyone can find my Twitter account and look at my pinned tweet, I think it's about an 8 or 9 part pinned tweet showing why they make no measurable difference in world climate to switch to electric cars, certainly versus, say, a 50-mile-per-gallon light hybrid, which, you know, again, costs $10,000, $12,000 less.
Yeah. So that's fascinating. I mean, there's so much here that we can talk about. I mean, I should mention, actually, your Twitter, which is at StanPhilCap.
StanPhilCap, at StanPhilCap, yeah.
Got it. Well worth a follow if you're interested in Tesla, and actually lots of macro themes and markets and the Fed and everything.
And horrible jokes.
Yeah, and the state of New York City as well, which is always quite...
It'll make you happy that you live in some village in Yorkshire or where, wherever the hell you're...
Buckinghamshire, actually. But to be honest, we've got London on our... I'm sitting here in our London office right now, and it's looking beautiful, but the city, the financial district's a bit of a world away from certain corners of London, so
yeah, you got your own problems.
I think we all do. But back to the climate change and EVs, and do EVs actually matter? Do they make a difference? I mean, you've just kind of said you don't think they do, but you know, what's the, like, why are we going down this route?
That's a really good question. And if you pull aside, and this is, again, you should see my pinned tweet, or your audience should. If you pull aside any politician or voter who supports this stuff and say, okay, I'm open-minded, I understand and acknowledge that, you know, the climate is very gradually warming. If I spend $1 trillion subsidizing electric cars over, say, light hybrids, how much can I expect in reduced world temperatures? What's the cost-benefit analysis? They will look at you, you know, as if either you or they are from a different planet. They have never done a cost-benefit analysis. You know what they say? Their backup plan is always, well, we can't just do nothing. Well, you essentially are spending $1 trillion to do nothing. I mean, that's the answer. I mean, you know, even if they reduce temperatures by, you know, 1/100th of a degree, which is probably about what it would be, you know, imagine how much healthcare you could buy people for the same amount of money, how many more lives you'd save than that incrementally unmeasurable temperature reduction. So the point is, there are a lot of stupid politicians. Now, what's interesting, and I'm sort of tuned into this, as I said, because we own Volkswagen, is Germany in particular is starting to push back and rebel. You know, for instance, Germany, and I believe maybe the UK, or I should say Europe, and I believe maybe the UK, are planning to ban gasoline cars and diesel cars, ICE cars, and starting in 2035. Germany is severely pushing back against that now for very good reasons. I mean, they're saying it's for economic reasons, but it may as well be for, you know, numerous other reasons. And so there's a really good chance that the pressure to continue adopting EVs, you know, may pull back, you know, as voters rebel and politicians get attuned to that. And that's going to be another headwind for the EV industry, where maybe it doesn't dominate the world. Maybe it eventually winds up with 30% market share. And let me just say one other thing broadly about that, because I have been obviously talking about how they're really quite a kludge for a lot of people at this point. Once solid state batteries are in mass production, which, you know, hopefully would be around the year 2030, maybe early 2030s. There are a lot of big companies, by the way, as far as we know, none of which are Tesla, who are doing a lot of work on solid state batteries. Then you'll have batteries that weigh considerably less than the current ones, charge considerably faster, and are much more energy dense. And then even if it makes no difference still from an environmental or let's say a climate standpoint, might put less emissions in the air and in a crowded city. Even if they made no difference, at least from a consumer standpoint, they would be desirable products, you know?
Yes.
It's not that I have no hope ever for BEVs, but solid state batteries are a necessity for mass adoption that isn't jammed down people's throats.
Yeah. We're seeing pushback against net zero here. You're seeing populist movements, I guess. Donald Trump in the US sort of embodies some of that sort of, you know, anti the climate agenda. And so that's playing out in the political scene and the politics and the geopolitics is part of, you know, the Tesla story, and it all kind of meshes together. So just on Musk, there was a note from, I'm sure it's probably one of your favorites, Adam Jonas. He's back. And so I do a sort of daily commentary, various things. It's not specific, not particularly stock specific. It's more kind of general what's happening. And Adam Jonas saying, you know, he wrote in his note, it's worth pointing out that the profitability of Tesla is currently substantially lower than that of internal combustion makers. And that is with the benefit of monetizing regulatory credits, downstream retail operations, and other high margin software contributions. Yes, it is worth pointing that out. So, I mean, this Musk factor, this sort of what is it about him? Why? Because it's clearly a bit of a, people are enthralled by him and interested in him, and
increasingly fewer people are enthralled by Musk. You know, there's an old movie. It's a terrific American film called, I think it's called A Face in the Crowd from the late 50s. Starred a guy named Andy Griffith in one of his rare serious roles, where he plays this itinerant preacher who would move from town to town, get up on a stump and start preaching. And he would gradually gain bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger crowds. And eventually he becomes huge and gets a TV show and you know, millions of people following him, you know, the way, or hundreds of millions were following Musk, I guess. And then, like, he says something on his TV show when he thought the microphone was off, but it was really on, that showed, you know, what a scammer he was. And the people just, you know, walk away. Right.
Yeah.
And what's gradually happening with Musk, I mean, you know, first of all, here in the States, he really, you know, alienated his major buyers, which are liberal Democrats.
You know? Yeah.
So people are gradually walking away from him, to the point where for a lot of people who used to treat him like some kind of god, he's become almost a punchline, you know, almost a laughingstock. So look, I mean, he's been caught lying over and over and over and over again. The biggest question in the mind of a lot of people, such as myself, is how he has avoided regulatory scrutiny, or I shouldn't say scrutiny, how he's avoided any kind of ramifications that mean anything from regulators. Yeah. I mean, you know, provable frauds. I mean, the first video he put out, which is still on the website promoting, you know, so-called full self-driving, it was proven to be fraudulent. The one that was put together with the Stones painted black on the soundtrack, that's still up there. I mean, you know, Elizabeth Holmes went to jail for this. You know, that guy, Trevor, whatever, who pushed the truck down the hill, he's in jail for this. And Musk is still out there and it's still up on the website. So my point is, no, even as egregious as all this stuff is, nobody gets away with this stuff forever. Eventually, they all go down. Some ambitious prosecutor, whatever, you know, will take him down. And that'll be it. And then the stock will collapse. And then people will wake up and go, oh, wait a second. We have a car company. By the way, you know, so I own VW. It's getting crushed today because people were disappointed with the earnings it reported. Even with those earnings, it's still selling at like 4x earnings this year. And it has a negative market cap if you factor out its Porsche stake, which trades publicly, and its Traton's stake, the commercial vehicles with which trades probably. But my point is, people are disappointed because Volkswagen is reporting overall, I think, around a 7% operating margin, or they plan to this year. Tesla just reported a 5.5% operating margin in Q1. And that was with selling whatever, $400 million worth of credits. Plus they collect here in the US tax credits on whatever batteries they make, and apparently they get half of the tax credits on the batteries that Panasonic makes for them. So, right. I mean, the valuation of Tesla is so completely absurd. And by the way, there's something else going on, which is, you're probably familiar with the phrase price anchoring, where the market sort of loses its bearings. It loses its perspective on the valuation of a company, and instead says, well, this was $400 2 years ago. It must be cheap at $150. Right? It's not taking the next step, which is multiplying that by 3.2 billion shares, right? Or dividing the earnings per share into that $150. So, you know, look, it's a, if you look at a chart, if you look at a long-term weekly chart of Tesla since it topped out, I think at 414 a few years ago, it's clearly a staircase down of lower highs and lower lows.
And didn't Musk kind of top ticked it, didn't he? I've still got a marker on my chart which said when he began selling it was the peak.
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the reasons I don't remember when he began, but I know he sold it certainly at much higher prices than it is now. Of course, you know, that was to buy Twitter, which happily his equity in Twitter has likely vaporized into nothing. So, you know, again, look, he's still a very wealthy guy on paper. When this is all over, he'll still be obviously a multi-billionaire. He'll still be worth whatever, 10, 15 billion, maybe more. But he's not going to be worth, you know, what he's worth on paper with Tesla at a $600 billion market cap, much less when it was a $1 trillion market.
Yeah. And I guess he's maybe he's losing interest in Tesla. Maybe he's, you know, focusing on Mars and space rockets and things.
I think he's focusing on spending all day on Twitter. I mean, I spend all day on Twitter, but at least I'm not running five companies. And I have an excuse, right? I mean, if you look at this guy's, I don't follow him anymore, but every once in a while I'll punch up his timeline. And if you click on where it shows replies, you know, not just tweets, this guy is responding all day long to people on Twitter. You know, I mean, how does this guy run five, you know, whatever, however many companies he's supposed to be running? So he's a big bullshitter. You know, the big bullshitters are the guys who always claim brag about how hard they work, right? Yeah, the guys I know who really work hard running companies, they don't brag about it. You know, they just do it. So he's coasting and he's going to coast into oblivion.
Well, I guess it's just to what you were saying earlier, you can fool some of the people some of the time. And it's that, you know, it's that sort of thing. But you can't fool everybody all the time, I guess.
And even some of the people who you can fool, eventually they stop getting fooled.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And then there was that funny, I remember just on Twitter, I think it was Matt Levine writing about when he bought it. It was like a kid buying their favorite toy.
Matt Levine is just fantastic. Everyone out there should read him. I believe it's free, even without a Bloomberg subscription.
His column
every day. Sign up for the email. He writes usually about three or four, you know, finance topics a day, and he is just take is hilarious. Yeah, he's great.
Well worth a read. And then just the last point on price anchoring, because I just wanted to touch on Cathie Wood, because I think that's maybe a good. A good way to wrap it up, because I think
Scamstress Cathy, as I call her, as you know, on Twitter, that's my nickname for her. Yeah.
There was that Morningstar report saying that it's Cathie Wood's ARK investors destroyed $14 billion in wealth over the last decade.
A lot of people top ticked her fund. That was my fund had a huge year in 2022. Mm. And a big chunk of that was I just had this massive ARK short position. Of course, I covered it. I covered it way too soon. I almost top ticked it, but I covered it, as I recall, in sort of the low 70s. And it got a hell of a lot lower than that and still is. But yeah, I mean.
Is it Tuttle?
Oh, yeah, he's good. Craig Tuttle. Is that fund still around? Sark.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. Or I guess you do it with options, do you?
Yeah, I mean, I just was outright short.
Right.
I mean, I certainly didn't have to worry about paying much of a dividend, as I recall. I mean, he's not going to keep getting away with this. Now, the one other thing I should add is, you know, because we talk about Musk's wealth, is obviously he's got that big stake in SpaceX, which people keep investing in higher and higher valued rounds. So on paper, he's, you know, worth tens of billions from SpaceX. But SpaceX is going to be another company with sketchy financials. As it is, you know, you may have seen this on Twitter, but they talk about being profitable under certain, you know, conditions of profitability or whatever. And one of the conditions is they exclude the cost of rocket launches for their satellites.
That makes sense.
Did you see that?
Yeah, no, I didn't.
I mean, if you remember WeWork's, you know, community adjusted EBITDA, remember that?
Oh yeah.
That notorious. Well, this is a satellite rocket company profitability without counting the costs of launching the rockets. So those satellites last, I read, about 5 years and have to be replaced. Wow. You know, it's an expensive service. And it's a terrific service in places where there's no service. I know somebody who's sailing around the world who has one, and we can communicate that way. Mm. But that's not a lot of people who, by definition, if you're in a sparsely populated area, by definition, that's a very small addressable audience that can afford your, you know, satellite dish and service, because the areas where the real customers are, they have alternatives that are much less expensive. So this thing is, other than maybe it's government military contracts, from a consumer standpoint, this will never be a big business, you know, on a net profitability basis, if it's even viable. You know, maybe it's viable, but not by a lot.
But I guess as we've seen with Tesla, the market can stay irrational longer than you might like.
So
look, I have no SpaceX position. I don't care how long it stays irrational. And, and you know, I likely won't have one. I mean, yeah, if it gets to $1 trillion and it's public, which obviously he wants to get public at some point. That's why Jonas keeps kissing his ass, because he wants to get Morgan Stanley on the SpaceX IPO. So eventually it'll get public and I'll look at it. But I would rather make money, and I don't care what happens to Musk if I have to do that trade off. I mean, you know, Tesla's going to go where I think it's going, which is into the teens per share, or, you know, maybe the low 20s to be generous. And it gets there and Musk still walks away with $50 billion. Great. I don't care, you know.
Yeah, no, sure.
Yeah. In the best possible world, Tesla would get to the teens and Musk would be broke and in jail. But my number one priority is that Tesla, you know, is that I get the proper price for Tesla. You know?
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense. Brilliant. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Be the first to listen to Overleveraged by following the Overleveraged podcast directly on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. That way you can listen to our content as soon as it drops every Thursday. Thank you for listening. Remember, all opinions, news, research, analysis, prices, or other information is provided as general market commentary, not as investment advice, and all potential results discussed are not guaranteed to be achieved. The information may have been derived from publicly available sources, company reports, personal research, or surveys. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Trading carries risk of capital loss, and the service is available to professional clients only.